Welcome to CodeCast. We're a podcast that focuses on everything tech, and we give you an idea of what developers, startups, and creatives are up to in Zambia and across Africa. Every 2 weeks, we explore different topics and applications of technology in the real world. Every episode is brought to you by Agora Code Community. For more information, visit agoracode.community or follow us on Twitter at CodeAgora. So this is episode 18 of CodeCast. I'm your host, Mukuma, and we're back again.
Back again.
We should stop doing this shit.
Why?
Anyway. It was unprofessional. Cynthia, what do you think?
We need a more structured...
Yes?
We need a more structured introduction. No, clearly this is distracting.
Distracting.
Yes. There are some issues.
I mean, if I had a Mac, I'd be distracted.
It's not a Mac. It's about the content on the Mac, not the Mac itself. Let's not get it twisted.
So for context,
yes.
Cynthia's brought her work into the studio, and we don't like that.
No, we don't. Especially because she's doing her work on the
Mac. Have we actually started recording, or this is just testing the mics?
We already started.
Give.
This is how not in the room you are right now.
Like we said the whole thing, we did a countdown, there were like fireworks that went off when we started recording.
We almost did a drum roll, but
yeah.
Then
we felt it would be a little unprofessional.
Anyway,
you know what?
I get your point, Elias.
Yeah.
Yes.
We'll throw it back to the listeners, I guess.
Yeah.
Should we do like a more
structured intro?
Are you tired of how Mukuma greets you?
Yeah, I've been told about that greeting though. Maybe I should like twist it a little bit because I'm getting too predictable. Like people are now mimicking me on the road and the streets, you know, the cold streets.
What's the greeting?
Welcome.
Oh my God.
Yeah, structured.
Yeah, so it's anyway.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to slide straight into the news now.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bunch of stuff that's happened though recently.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting harder to pick what we're going to cover. But I guess it's part of the job of content creation.
Yeah, and as always, feedback. If you guys feel there's something that we should have covered that we didn't cover,
shoot us a DM.
Yeah, let us know. It will help us understand what our listeners are looking for in coverage of the news.
Definitely. And on our Twitter feed, pinned post is the survey, so we'd greatly appreciate it if you took that survey, and hopefully you give us feedback that would help us grow and get better.
Yes.
So, the news.
The news. So, the biggest thing is obviously Facebook's announcement about their cryptocurrency. There've been rumors and leaks the last 6 to 7, 8 months, and finally they unveiled Libra.
Ah, Libra. Do tell us more.
I don't know what there is to tell. It's a cryptocurrency, obviously. Well, if you thought it was the same as Bitcoin, it's really not. It's based on different principles, I guess. Bitcoin, you know, you can mine that stuff.
Yeah.
You can't mine Libra because it's backed by actual money and assets and that sort of thing. That is managed by a council. So it's like a non-profit organization. And the headquarters are going to be in Geneva. So it's like Facebook have built it and they're giving it away, kind of. Like, okay, we want other people to manage this. It'll be a council. We'll only have like voting rights. So it's not a Facebook thing. It's more or less like, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it doesn't seem like they have that much control. So the whole idea of having currency... actual currency and assets backing it is to give it more reliability and credibility as well. So it's not exactly clear what kind of currencies they're looking at initially. And I guess I'll review that later on. It's not due for release until next year. But it's got its own issues as well. Regulation, obviously. The fact that it's managed by a council, it's not unregulated. Like all these other cryptocurrencies fall in like a crack. It's in a space where we don't there's no real laws that govern them.
Yeah,
they don't trigger any kind of what can I say? They don't trigger anything that requires regulation.
Yeah.
So now that this currency is regulated by a council, it throws in a whole different dynamic because it's like a central bank. That's basically how they're going to function. So then central bank has regulation. So how do we manage all these different things and so on and so forth? And the main goal is for financial inclusion. So the whole idea is to bring you know, the whole concept of cryptocurrency into this space, especially for developed countries. The most interesting thing is, when Facebook looks at revenue, right, which is kind of like one of the reasons why they might actually be doing this, they make a lot of money from advertising and all that stuff in other continents. The US, I think, is leading, Europe second, Asia. Africa, especially sub-Saharan Africa, is like, I think, maybe 1.8%, 2% revenue, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So this represents maybe a chance for them to grow the revenue base in Africa as well. They're going to have a wallet. It's good. They're going to call it Calibra.
Calibra.
Right?
Well, it's not a wallet. Actually, Calibra will be a company that will be developing services based off Libra.
Oh.
Yes.
That's interesting.
So Calibra will be the company but offering services, and it will have the wallet.
Oh. So I guess the idea is to leverage off this platform and... maybe have people pay through their mediums. WhatsApp, Facebook is really prevalent here. It's free in most places. Mm-hmm. So maybe that would drive revenue up. So that might be one of the reasons they're doing it. In terms of security, I mean, they're going there. They're not, what's the phrase? They're not leaving any stones unturned in terms of offering securities, like a bunch of algorithm, like this. There's this funny algorithm that Bitcoin and all these other cryptocurrencies are built off of, and that's, they're using pretty much the same structure. So I won't go into it. I'm not an algorithm specialist, but we'll leave a link in the description for people that are interested in like the kind of infrastructure that's there and so on and so forth. And if we're looking at how this actually benefits Africa, for example, like one of the biggest problems we have here, and this is something that's been listed as one of the things that they want to solve, is remittance for like people sending money back to Africa. So funny thing is, I didn't even know this was a thing, but most countries actually make a lot of money off people sending money back in, like, back home to support their families and stuff like that. And I think by the end of 2019 there was a projection of about $40 million revenue just from people sending money back home, which is actually a really huge sum of money if you think about it. And apparently people pay a lot of money to send money back, and sometimes it leaves them broke. So it's like a...
I am a witness to that.
Oh really? It's happened to you? I haven't experienced that yet. You tried to send money back to someone, or someone sent you money and you spent more money. Oh, okay, that's interesting. So you'd benefit from a platform like this?
Well, first we have to see what it will do. I mean, this is too early for me to say whether I'll benefit from it or not. So let's wait and see.
And the most interesting thing is, people will be able to build software applications off of this platform as well. So it's not really limiting. It's gonna be a platform for a lot of innovation as well. It's not very clear if it will directly compete with mobile.
Yeah. So it's a whole thing, but yeah. Any reservations about the fact that this is Facebook, though?
The fact that they're kind of not controlling it completely kind of assures a lot of people. They are hoping they would get 100 big companies on board in terms of the council and stuff like that. And it's based on votes, so each one has a single vote. I mean, Calibra is going to be owned by Facebook and is on the council as well. So that's two votes from Facebook against 98. So I think the odds are in my favor here. I don't mind. And also the fact that you don't need to have a Facebook account to actually use Libra. So that's like a plus.
That's great, because the only reason I hadn't deleted my Facebook account was because of Libra. It's my daily sarcasm.
Wow. Anyway, we'll put a pin in this, really.
Oh, no.
We'll put a pin in this, really, because there's a lot still to be done. If you've listened to the episode, the Vergecast episode about this, it's really interesting because they kind of shit on it, but then it's the fears we have. Like, there's a lot of regulation involved, and in Africa to cyber laws, for example. We're already struggling with that. In some places, they're not doing anything about it because there's the waiting game that's happening, like seeing how it work in other countries and then implement it in. So it's interesting to see how that work. I feel like that would be the biggest hurdle. After regulation, it's now like actual mindset shifts. Well, how long has it taken for people to get used to mobile money, for example? Then you come and introduce, you know, a cryptocurrency. And the good thing about it is they're not really trying to blow people away with like technical stuff, blockchain, what, permissionless permissions, you know, like it's really just you can pay for things much easier than you used to. You don't need to jump through hoops.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, we'll put a pin in it. They really they officially roll out next year, so still some time.
Yeah, 2020 is gonna be a big year for tech.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
I can't actually wait for 2020.
Believe me, you can.
Yeah, and you will.
And you will.
Well, I will. But, like, you know, my mind is, like, really looking forward to 2020. No. Well, for other personal stuff as well. Oh, yeah.
Please, do share.
Not just global stuff.
do share. Anyway, so that's pretty much it on Libra and Calibra and all this stuff. We'll post links in the description, obviously, and hopefully we'll get a lot more feedback about this. Especially interested in whether this will actually disrupt banking infrastructure and whether they are going to adapt to this. Because mobile money already was a key threat. So how does this
work? Definitely. It's an ongoing story for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
So last week was E3, Electronic Entertainment Expo. So three E's. Okay. Ergo E3.
Hence E3.
Yeah, so think of it as like if the World Cup happened every year, but for video games. I was going to say the Super Bowl of video games, but well, yeah, I guess it's the Super Bowl of video games. Anyway, this is the place where like most big news pertaining to video games comes out. In recent years, it's actually been like dropping off. Like, I feel like a lot of the publishers in video games are starting to take control of their own message, so to say. So this year's E3, Sony wasn't there. They said they weren't going to be there, I think, a few months back. They were like, yeah, this year's E3, we're not going to be there. But in terms of big news that came out of E3, so this E3, this year's E3 was weird because it's the year before the next generation, which is always a weird year because a lot of companies can't show what they're working on because they're working on next gen stuff, but the next gen consoles haven't been properly revealed, and it's a whole thing. So a lot of people, like from what I was seeing online, were saying that E3 this year was a bit of a letdown. I was not really expecting a big blowout. Sony didn't show up, and from what we saw, they didn't need to show up. I mean, there's nothing that I think Sony will be losing sleep over, thinking, why didn't we go to E3?
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm not going to go over the games. Obviously, there were a lot of games. I'll just go over some of the big things. So, first of all, before E3 happened, we got more information on Google Stadia. So, Google Stadia is Google's streaming platform where they're going to be letting you stream games. So you don't need to have a console or a PC. You just have something that can run Chrome or a Chromecast or something like that.
Yeah.
They revealed pricing on this.
Is it what we predicted?
What did we predict?
$15, I think.
It's less than that, but there's a catch. It's $10 a month for Stadia Pro.
Okay.
This gives you 4K streaming with 60 frames and HDR with 5.1 surround sound. However, the $10 gets you access to stream the games. You still have to buy the games.
But that's only fair.
This kind of just punctuates my point. Because who is this for?
Yeah.
Like,
it's a bit tricky.
Yeah. Like, first of all, you're going to need a really good connection for this.
Yeah.
But it's targeted at people that don't want to buy a console.
I'd rather buy the console, buy the games.
Than
yeah, than so stress. You're still buying the games, but you're paying $10 a month. But then you're also going to have a really good connection.
Yeah.
And then if you don't have an internet connection, you can't play your game. So even from, say, a portability point of view, right? When I have, say, a Nintendo Switch, mm-hmm. I can have my Switch, I have my games, I download them onto my Switch, and I play them. Stadia, on the other hand, requires you to have a really good connection. So if you're traveling and you want to play your game, first of all, you're going to have to be living at a place with a really good internet connection. And as far as I know, hotel internet isn't great. If you're camping, well...
If you're camping, you have no reason playing video games, though.
My point is, I don't understand who this is for. And a lot of what I'm seeing online, a lot of people are asking the same question. This is targeted at people that don't want to have a console or can't afford to buy a console, but can afford an online experience that will offer the bandwidth to stream 4K 60 frames. Like, it doesn't really add up.
The economy of scale, not balancing.
Yeah. Anyway, they said starting in 2020, so next year, there's going to be like a free... there's going to be a free SKU, which is basically going to let you play games at 1080 60 frames with stereo sound on any Chrome device. So you can buy your games and then stream them at 1080 60. I think this makes a little more sense, but again, who is it targeted at? Anyway, they're also talking about they're going to provide... a few free games, which, by the way, current players are already doing with subscriptions like PlayStation Plus, Xbox Live, Xbox Game Pass. Like at E3, and we're going to get into a few of these things, but like at E3, Xbox basically said to me personally, to me,
they sent you an email.
They said it to my face. They said to me, you're thinking about getting Stadia, here are the reasons not to. Okay, so maybe let's get into like what Xbox revealed at E3. So the big one was, of course, they talked about Xbox Scarlett, which is their next-gen Xbox. So this is not like the Xbox One X, which is like an incremental step up. This is like a full next-gen console.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the specs are very similar to what we heard from PlayStation 5, which makes me feel like PlayStation only did that interview to undercut Xbox, because this would have had a much bigger, you know, thump if we didn't know the specs for the PlayStation 5. So the usual suspects, support for 8K, it's going to have an SSD, which is going to basically remove load times. It's going to be using GDDR6. For RAM, it's going to have real-time ray tracing, and it's going to have custom AMD CPU and GPU. So, yeah, I don't know what more we can say about that. Refer to our talk about the PlayStation 5.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then they talked about their Game Pass. So now you can get what they're calling... Game Pass Ultimate, if I'm remembering correctly, where you can pay $15 and you get Game Pass on your Xbox, on your PC, and a subscription of Xbox Live. So this is what I was talking about when I said that they talked to me. They said, no, this is why you don't get Scorpio. Because Game Pass will let you download your games, and it has a much larger catalog of games than...
Under the $15 anymore.
Exactly. So, yeah. Other than that, I mean, E3 had video games. Keanu Reeves came on stage for Cyberpunk. They revealed gameplay of Final Fantasy VII. Yeah. I think we'll include a link for like a comprehensive recap, but I wanted to focus on the tech. For our E3 coverage. All in all, I'd say not a great E3, not a terrible E3 by any stretch of the imagination, but the real hammer, I think, is going to be laid at PlayStation Experience later in the year and E3 next year, because holiday 2020 is when we're going to see the next gen consoles, and I can't wait.
Of course you can't.
I Yeah. Should we talk about YouTube controversy?
Yeah, we should. Okay. We should. Okay, so getting into YouTube, right? So there's that whole controversy surrounding YouTube and whose responsibility it is for all the content they put up on these platforms. Mm-hmm. Those that talk about the algorithm and how it makes it easier for pedophiles to find videos of minors, and then in turn, you know, like, you know, that what's the word?
It's so, I don't know what the word you're looking for is. But yes,
predator. I was looking for the word predator, but then using it in the sentence that I was constructing. Anyway, for our listeners, we do have someone on a call. I think we're getting into the habit of having remote calls.
Yeah.
So we have someone joining us in the studio remotely. His name is Freddie. Freddie, say hi to everybody.
Hi guys, how are you doing?
They're not going to answer. But thanks for joining us, Freddy. I like how he paused almost as if waiting for the listeners. They'll respond in a couple of days.
Yeah, they'll respond in form of Twitter posts and hopefully voice messages that we keep crying for and we're not getting so far, still waiting for that first one. But yeah, pretty much. So Section 230, that kind of protects all these platforms, right? Okay, this it doesn't really apply to the rest of us, but I guess we'll kind of like talk about it anyway. So basically, Cynthia, are you okay?
Yes.
Don't die.
Don't die here. Yeah. Then die at home, not here. We'll have to start explaining.
At least don't die while we're recording.
I am not going to die.
Okay.
I think.
Yes. Anyway, today's episode is like all over the place.
Okay. Anyway, let me continue. So basically, Section 230 ensures that platforms can't be sued for content posted by their users, provided that they, in good faith, pull down content that violates law, basically. So like over the last 6 months, there's been all these... Like, guys, the internet is an interesting place. Like, people post the weirdest of stuff on the internet.
Yeah.
Like, recently, there was that Supreme Court judge video. Like, it was photoshopped, and it made it seem like she was drunk. And there was, like, this whole controversy around that. Like, everyone saying Facebook should pull the video down, but then Facebook took forever to pull it down. And there was this interview, I think, on CNBC or CNN, and Facebook's VP of, like, public relations was, like, basically not answering the question, but just jumping around whose responsibility it is to own up to some of this content that's posted on these platforms.
So basically like giving PR answers.
Yes.
Yeah.
Basically. So there's the other side. So if you're a publisher, for example, you're responsible for, you're liable basically for everything that you put up. But then there's like caveats as well.
Yeah.
You can be a publisher and have a section on like your platform where you're liable. But maybe stuff like the comments, where people are posting comments to like your article or publication, you're not liable for stuff like that. That's like now a different ballgame. It's like now you're acting as a platform and a publisher.
So, for example, a website like TechCrunch or The Verge.
The Verge, yeah.
Yeah. They're a publisher, so they have their content that they publish. So their articles and their hot scoops. Then they have the comment section under that, which is user generated content. So they can actually moderate that, but that kind of falls under like platform rules because it's user generated. So them moderating the comment section means that they can take down their content of anyone that breaks their rules, and really, I think it's at the publisher's discretion, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Whereas a company like YouTube is a platform. So YouTube's content is all user-generated. Even when YouTube themselves upload a video, they're uploading it as a user. So it's all user-generated. So as a platform, you can't then go and sue YouTube because there's a video that... I don't know, breaks law or something like that. now the line is being closed, because the question now is some quote-unquote platforms for in this gray area where they're publishers and publishers.
Facebook.
Yes, perfect example, Facebook, right? I mean, Facebook is more of a platform, but they, like, here's the thing, right? You can put Facebook in the publisher box, but you can also put Facebook in the platform box. I think the same can be said about YouTube and Twitter.
Yeah.
So, the question is, and I'm not too clear on the 230, what does the law state?
Look, I'm not going to go into the specifics. Okay, no. I'm talking about section 230.
Yes. My point is, it's getting harder and harder to draw that line, right?
Yeah, and it doesn't help because the law doesn't compel them to pick either side. Not one or the other.
Yeah, and we have to remember that these are private corporations. So if we're being completely strict about it, they can do whatever they want as long as they're within the confines of the law.
Do you know what I have a problem with? To be honest, that's a big problem with that. They're not one or the other. My issue comes back to the users of the platform, right? Mm-hmm. Well, pedophiles, that's a different argument. I won't even get into that. But mm-hmm. then if I post a video, right,
mm-hmm.
about Cynthia. Cynthia is an upstanding member of the community.
Mm-hmm.
She goes to church every Sunday. And she put up a video recently, you know, mm-hmm. she's talking to a few people.
Mm-hmm.
I doctored this video. Cynthia is now looking drunk in the video.
At church.
Yeah.
Jesus.
At the pulpit.
Oh.
Like,
the mic
that's,
in my hand.
That's a different dynamic. Mm-hmm. Okay, we always bring stuff back home, right? Like, mm-hmm. how does this work in our context? Because obviously we're not affected. We're not directly affected by Section 230. Like, that's American law.
Yeah, it's an American
law. It's American law. So what protects Cynthia
as a Zambian citizen?
Maybe this one, Fred, is yours, because we have no idea.
Oh, I was actually waiting when. Okay, so in Zambia we've got something called defamation. Defamation of character. So in Zambia, in the Republic, when somebody publishes something about you which is not true, basically that's defamation. Something that is not true, and it tends to lower your reputation in the right-thinking members of society, that is defamation, as plainly as I can put it for anybody else. So if Cynthia Case, for example, or whoever, where they portray her as drunk, and when she was not, and this is a judge of the Supreme Court or the High Court, this probably causes her reputation to be lowered or to be shunned. People don't look at her in the same light or respect her as they used to. So that is pretty much defamation. I must say, when it comes to like laws regarding Facebook, YouTube, Twitter in Zambia, we are not up to scratch yet. Because when you look at the Defamation Act, most people talk about our newspapers. It's still as back then when articles were published in the newspaper and things like that. Also on the radio, so it basically talks about the radio and newspaper. The Defamation Act is chapter 68 of the legislature. So you can actually check it out. There's a website called Zamli. So you can just type Zamli, and that's Zambian legal information, and it will give you the app. You can search for most things there. So, coming to your question, if that were in Zambia, she could sue for defamation. If it were published in a paper, she could sue the paper too. There are a lot of cases where the person who published, who caused the article to be published is sued, and the newspaper itself is sued. So if it's a radio, you sue the radio station. There were multiple cases where Tando Zambia has been sued, where a radio station has been sued because they published a particular story or say something that was defamatory. So in that context, that particular context, you then can sue for defamation. But a lot of other, like it, with any other crime, eh? A lot of ingredients have to be satisfied. So, for example, if I said something about Kuma and it was published maybe on Facebook, he could sue for defamation based on that post. And he could sue me. And then he has to prove, though, that what the content of the article was defamatory. So therefore, that his reputation was lowered, and the right-thinking members of society would look at that and look at it as defamatory, and things like that, and that there was some sort of damage caused. So the defense to defamation, like you would have a defense to any story published, is if it's true. So if I say something and you say, no, this is defamatory, but it's true, you cannot then sue me. You can sue me, but you wouldn't be successful in an action for defamation. So if that were in Zambia, she would sue the person who caused the video or whatever to be published. I'm yet to come across an instance where you successfully sue the host, so if it's YouTube or whatever. By the way, nothing stops you from suing, even in America, nothing stops you from suing Facebook and YouTube and Twitter for hosting defamatory or content that you didn't want them. Nothing stops you from suing any person. But whether you'd be successful or not is another story.
Mm.
So in Zambia, basically, you could sue the person who tweeted, who posted on Facebook, who put it up in the newspaper, and things like that. As far as newspapers and radio stations go, you could sue them as well. As far as YouTube, Facebook is concerned, you could probably sue them. Not probably, you could sue them. For you to succeed in Zambia, I would say I'm not sure, because there's no law. It's unprecedented. Our laws are a bit of cake when it comes to social media. Mm.
But is there an excuse for them to be a cake, though? I feel like we've been...
Okay, maybe,
anyway, that's another issue.
Yeah, so that's...
considering we are advancing as well in software development, and I, as a Zambian developer, I come up with a platform that is similar to, say, YouTube, yes? And
yeah,
there's content that is put up. I from what you're saying, is it right for me to assume that right now in Zambia we don't have laws that would protect my users in case there's defamation on that particular platform?
I don't think it's your users, even you, huh?
Yeah, even...
No. So what I'm saying is, for someone to be successful where they've been defamed, like, mm-hmm, where you sue, so you develop a platform, and... somebody posts defamatory remarks about me, and then I sue the person and I sue you. That's what I'm saying. There's nothing regulating how you deal with social media companies. So, but whether you escape liability or not will depend on the defense that you put up. So, like I was explaining, in a case of murder, right? If I killed somebody and it was in self-defense, that is the defense to murder. Okay, so okay, the person wanted to attack me, so I attacked them first, and in the process, I killed them. That is your defense. Okay, so when we come to our content, our context, the host will be saying, no, I'm not the one who published it. Technically speaking, this is not like a newspaper where somebody brings a story and an editor has to edit, and therefore they publish it, you know. This is just a site where everybody can publish their own thing. So whether when you write, you are the author, you are the publisher, you know. When it comes to a newspaper, it's different, because the author, I might be the author, the publisher is different, you get.
Yeah.
So that might be the defense for a social media company to say, look, I didn't publish this. We, of course, create the platform, but we didn't publish this. So therefore, in what capacity are you suing us? So it'll be then for the person maybe who is claiming to be defamed to say, but you created the platform. You know, you made this possible for people to access such type of information. But it becomes hard because they would say then, look, nobody is forcing anybody to be on these platforms, or we did not entice them to do this and things like that. That's why it becomes a bit tricky. Mm. So I presume that's why it's also hard in the United States, where laws are proactive, moving with time, for them to sue social media companies, because that is the problem. A long time ago, like I've explained, a person would physically go to a newspaper and tell them, I have a story. And then they would sit down with the person, and the person would hear that story. And even as they are publishing, the newspaper is fully aware of the content, and there's been an editor who has edited it, and they are involved. For a social media company, they are not involved in the vetting of the story. They are not involved whether they are typos and things like that. It's, you know, just the way, like the way you would post anything. So that's somehow how they're getting away with it. So the only thing that maybe might be there is what safeguards can be put to ensure that when something goes up, it's taken down and things like that. I'll give an example of the Christchurch massacres in Australia. The person who was killing those Muslims actually put up a video while it was happening in real time. And some people were watching that. So Facebook put up, there's a plea, Facebook, the government, like, don't circulate that, don't provide it, put it down. You know, but over and above that, there's nothing that they could really do.
Yeah. Actually, you bring up a good point, because this is, like, I think the argument with, say, YouTube, right? YouTube is a platform. So, like, to Freddie's point, someone can upload it and it doesn't get vetted. They're saying that they're putting algorithms to kind of mark things that have, you know, unsavory content in them, but at the end of the day, things still slip through the cracks. The problem with the situation with YouTube is basically a monopoly when it comes to video content. So for example, the whole pedophilia thing, right? Mm-hmm. Someone could argue, I mean, YouTube themselves could argue and say, look, if you feel our site is so not for you, if you feel that the content that people are uploading is really unsavory and it's not for you, you could go to another site. Okay. The problem with that argument, and I think the same argument is true for sites like Facebook, is these companies have such a monopoly on whether it's social media or video content or whatever it might be, that telling someone that their alternative is for them to go to another platform, like the content that's on YouTube, where are you going to, Vimeo?
Yeah, I also wanted to say that the sad truth about these social media platforms is these are the things that give them money. You know, if there's a trending story about the viral video going around about some judge, well, like, people want to look for that. More users want to use it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they will come out and say, no, we condemn this and whatever. But at the end of the day, it works for them, you know, and sometimes. And also, human beings are picky and choosy about what they feel should be on social media and what they don't. So if somebody today, if I came up and said, we cannot be putting porn on Facebook, there would not be that much of an outcry, because it's subjective, you know. So we as a society as well have a role to play when it comes to things like this.
There's porn on
when
Facebook.
When we pick and choose what is offensive and what's not offensive because it's pleasing to us, such things will be happening. But if society were to say we cannot behave like this toward people. It's not right to fume a person drunk, or it's not right to fume a person in a particular state. It begins with us, because this day you find there's an accident, the first thing people want to do is take a video so that they post it on social media, because we promote that. We are the people that are promulgating that. So the next time a person does something that we feel is of the extreme, we are the same people that are just standing up and saying you can't do that. But when you look at it, we are the people promoting these things.
Okay.
I feel when it comes to like social media and things like that, the society at large needs to be as reactive or proactive, and they need to raise the same approach with all kinds of things. You know, recently there's a video about some guy hacking Chinese people that he stole from in Mumbai or something like that. You know, I don't see anybody here in Zambia saying, no, don't watch that. That's just promoting Zambia. Of course, I saw some posts. But we're actually circulating that. We actually want that. There's a video about, there's some valid video about some girl that was caught with some man in Indola, and women gathered around and inserted a bottle into her. We were the ones that were saying, where's that video? You know, you want to move to Z Kawalala or whatever, and things like that. So it becomes really hard when now it's you, you know? It's not another person, it's you. It's affecting you to say, can we take that down, because that's defamatory. When 2 days ago, you were the one sharing posts about other people. So at the end of the day, what are you doing about it? Because if you're not sharing that stuff, it doesn't go viral. How do things go viral? It's by people sharing it and watching it. So if we as human beings, forget the laws, forget everything, and not for such type of behavior, it will not catch on like wildfire. But even as I speak now, I bet somebody will listen to that and say, that's not possible. You know why? Because that's what we like. You know, as long as it's not me, that humiliating stuff, that stuff that's a bit, you know, uncomfortable, that's what we like. That's what we want to share. So at the end of the day, we ask ourselves as a society, do we really want to do that?
Anyway, I guess you raise a lot of valid points, and I guess that's, to be honest, that's an ideal. We can wish for that as much as we want, but we'll only achieve that to a certain extent, which is why there's so much pressure on these platforms, because the key is that they hold a lot more power to influence more than, let's say, we would if we go the society route and try to reshape mindsets and try to do all this stuff. And I kind of picked out something from what you said. It kind of comes down to like, there's this other stuff as well. If I'm taking a video of Elias, he doesn't know I'm taking a video of him. Let's say he's in a fight and I'm taking the video, and then like I put it up on social media and stuff like that. Like, what protects people that are unaware of what's going on? Is that still under the same defamation kind of thing, or is that like a different category altogether?
It depends. Am I winning the fight?
If you're not,
it kind of extends to stuff like memes as well. Like, you've seen someone take a picture of you and you don't even know someone's taking it, and all of a sudden you're a meme. And it's like going viral.
Yeah, what so if not I don't everything like falls under defamation.
Everything.
So there are some things like you said, a picture. So you find a picture of yourself and it's a meme. So we have things like right to privacy enshrined in our constitution. Mm-hmm. So in that particular moment, it's somebody taking a video of you where you feel you're in your space, in your home, whatever, and they're invading your privacy. Maybe freedom of expression, maybe you're expressing yourself in a particular way and people get what you were saying and they start ridiculing what you were saying. And is it infringing on one of your rights? So it borders on different things. So not everything could be defamation. Like I said, defamation would be something maybe derogatory, lowering your reputation. Your right to privacy is somebody takes a picture when maybe you're sleeping and maybe it becomes a meme and things like that. So it becomes really hard sometimes, because sometimes you don't even know who is the original person who posted this thing. So maybe someone just shared it and another person shared it.
Yeah.
And once you go after? Do you go after everybody who shared the post?
Yes.
Yeah.
And once stuff goes viral, like there's actually an episode of Why'd You Push That Button that tackles this, I think, because like once once you become a meme, like, there's very little you can,
can do about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I think, was it a meme of a cat or something where the owner was really mad about it? But, you know, once stuff goes viral, like, you can't
it's like posting videos and pictures in the wrong WhatsApp group.
Yeah.
And people have Androids and automatically
and they download. Automatically download it. That's it.
Even
like,
if you deleted
that, like a bunch of people. Yeah.
Nothing.
A bunch of people have access to that now and they can post it on whatever forums they want, whatever social media they want. So I think from that perspective, obviously you can sue, but it disappearing? Good luck.
It will linger.
It's a dilemma even for me when I think about it, because on one hand, if I say let's create a law that makes these people liable, the social media company, for the stuff that's posted there. On the other hand, the law should not penalize people who have not really promulgated something, if they're not actively involved in a particular thing. But there are some laws. I'll give you an example of if you are a parent and your child is playing by the pool and you can clearly see they would drown or whatever, and you don't do anything to stop that, you are liable because you have what is called a duty of care towards that kid, because they are helpless in and of themselves. So you could be sued for negligence because you owe the duty of care to your child, and you were not prudent in that particular step. Should such things apply to social media companies? I think to a certain degree they should be held liable to a certain degree, maybe 50%. But also on the flip side, you're looking at it like, how long would it take for them to vet everything that is posted, and for them to check and things like that? Should your post take a couple of minutes before, you know, such things? So it's a two-way thing.
Yeah, it's really interesting when you look at it, because I think it was yesterday I recently found out that we have another social media platform that's on the market in Zambia now. Like, I'll post a link in the description, but like you can tell there's so much work has gone into putting up this platform. Mm-hmm. But then when you look at all the other issues that other already established social media companies are going through, or platforms that are there's so many issues. So like, is there some kind of foresight for like local companies here? Like, do they see what's going on a global scale and thinking, okay, if we do get traction, we'll probably have the same problems? Are we thinking about content moderation, for example? Like, Facebook has sites almost across the globe now, right? For moderators actively looking at content going up online and making sure they pull down harmful content as quickly as possible. Like, stuff gets flagged within an hour these days, right?
Yeah, but there's also a lot of problems that come with that scale. Like, Facebook's biggest problem isn't, I don't think, that they're unable to moderate. It's that they have such a huge, base of users that you can put all the, like, a lot of times, like, Mark Zuckerberg will talk about, oh, we're creating algorithms that will, like, take care of this. I think, what's his name? Oh my God, I'm spacing on his name. The Tesla guy.
Shit.
Okay, Cynthia? The Tesla guy?
Last hope.
Okay. He famously said Mark Zuckerberg doesn't know what he's talking about when he's talking about AI and, algorithms and that kind of thing. But what all these companies, including YouTube, are trying to do with these algorithms is they're trying to make it a lot easier to flag things a lot quicker. Whether or not that will solve the issue of this quote-unquote unsavory content on... it's Elon Musk. Yes, I just remembered it off the top of my head just now. There is not a Google page open in front of me. But yes, the biggest problem that I think these guys are facing comes with scale. That's why, say, for example, one example of an app that can I give? Okay, let's give an example of Tinder, right? Tinder is a platform, but their content is, I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of issues with, like, bots and catfishing and whatnot, but their problems are not as big as Facebook's because they're not as big as Facebook. So I people that are a lot smarter than me are probably thinking about how to solve this problem. I don't know how to solve a problem that comes with scale of that size.
Mm-hmm.
Like, think of how many people are on Facebook. I mean, it's easier to point out people that are not on Facebook. So there in and of itself is a problem, because on top of having a huge spectrum of people that are completely different with different values and different cultures, like even simple things like take homophobia, for example. Like in Zambia, homophobia is on a completely different scale than it is in the USA because of different cultures, different people, and that kind of thing. So saying you're going to put a catch-all, which I think is what YouTube are trying to do, saying you're going to have a catch-all that is going to, you know, catch every bad actor, I don't think works at that kind of scale.
I guess when we throw in scale, it brings in a different dynamic. I agree that maybe the African or Zambian social media platforms or whatever content creation platforms that are available may not have the same problems as Facebook, but I don't think it takes away from the fact that we still need to put legislation in place. We still need to put safeguards in place to protect users and so on and so forth. Because just because the numbers are low doesn't mean we shouldn't need to protect people and so on and so forth. Yeah. So that still remains a big challenge, I guess. Tech has come to stay. There's lots of opportunities to make life easier, to make sure people can do business, they can reach more markets. It's to make sure you can enjoy many things that you couldn't before. Now you can listen to podcasts from across the world.
Mm-hmm.
You can talk to your aunt in faraway places, but that's coming with a price.
Yeah. So, I mean, with globalization, like a lot of people from different cultures are interacting in different ways, and there's obviously going to be blowback with that.
Yeah, and I really feel like this episode is tied into lots of other things that we've talked about before. Mm-hmm. I remember the conversation with Ngosa, for example.
Yeah.
Like, we talked about internet governance and how, like, there's a real need for a lot of work to be done in terms of sensitizing people on what the pitfalls are on online platforms.
Mm-hmm.
We go back to ecosystem lock-ins.
Yeah.
Like, there's lots of things that you need to consider when you're choosing what kind of device you're buying, because it comes with its own terms and conditions that, to be honest, none of us really read anyway. But
we just accept.
Yeah, we just accept. And I'm sure if Facebook included a clause that says you can't sue us for anything,
we wouldn't know that.
Yeah. So, like, there's a responsibility on both ends, and it's really, really important that we factor that in as well.
Yeah, definitely. Anyway, like the whole YouTube pedophilia thing, and I think we seamlessly transitioned into the topic of the show. But I think it's a really difficult problem for them to solve, because in and of itself, it's a problem that comes from their algorithm working too well.
It's really a widespread problem. It's not a problem unique to the US or unique to Africa. Mm-hmm. Like, we're still going to see a lot of innovation. Look at smart homes, for example, right?
Yeah.
This is like, for me, this is like the biggest invasion of privacy I've ever seen that we're okay with. You know what I mean? It's like an exchange. Yeah.
but that's because they've done a really good job of convincing us that it's not an invasion of privacy because your information is safe with them. It's a whole thing, right? Like, you there are companies that you try. I think we've actually reached a stage where we have become kind of comfortable with the data that certain companies have on us. For example, Google has my phone number, my email address, my pictures. It has all.
They have your credit card information.
They have my credit card information.
Not just that, they know where you've been.
They know where I've been. Like, they have all this data, and I personally know that they have this data, but they've kind of made it seem, and I don't necessarily buy this, but they've made it seem like it's safe with them. They're the ones that we can trust to have that our data. And because that, coupled with the fact that that data makes our lives a lot more convenient. I mean,
so it all comes down to who you trust to hold your data.
Yeah, but then this is something that we've talked about before. Like, can you really trust anybody that's making money
off holding your data?
Because that's data that we know that Google sells. I mean, the ads don't come to us because, I mean, the people serving the ads are
guessing
that you're interested in tech. Like,
this is just too close to
home. It's because Google is basically saying, no, this is a subset of the people that you want to advertise to. So
and I guess one of the downsides of being a third world country is we don't really see that this affects us now.
Yeah,
just because you're not at the same level as, you know, some of these quote unquote Western countries, then you don't have the same problems. We kind of do. We just don't know.
Oh yeah, like I think it's gonna come to a head. It's definitely something that in the not so far future we're going to be dealing with ourselves.
Yeah.
I think it's gonna come a lot closer to home. So.
And on that sad note, because it's actually really sad to be honest, like sad.
I mean, it started on such a happy note. We talked about
new cryptocurrency.
We talked about video games. We talked about 2020.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, then it took a dark turn. Now we're talking about like pedophilia and
the right to privacy
and defamation and.
There is a really neat tool that I found online recently. You know, Firefox really, like, Mozilla and Firefox are really, like, on this. They're really focused on privacy. Mm-hmm. And I'll post a link in the description that will let you know if, using your email address, if any of your information has been, what's the word? Has been
compromised
basically. So any data leaks, any kind of breaches that have happened with any platform that's hosted your data, it will be able to flag most of that stuff. I can't speak to the accuracy of some of this information, but yeah, I did find out that my information was leaked on one platform I signed up on. Like, I don't even know when, I don't even use it anymore, but yeah, there's that sort of stuff. So that's something that we'll put in the description
you
as well.
You only had one?
Yeah, just one.
I think I'll have more than one.
I think I'll have more than one.
I think if I posted my dummy email address that I use for some signups, I'd find more. But yeah,
no, because I know I already know, because I was on PSN during the 2011 outage. Is it 2011? Yeah, the 2011 outage when like all the information was leaked, like credit card details and all that stuff. I was on PSN, so I gathered my information was leaked. And thank God I didn't have credit card information on PSN then. But yeah, I feel like I'm not safe.
You and I both.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so to close, would like to hear what your story is with regards to privacy. Mm-hmm. Have you ever been in a position where you feel like someone's violated your right to privacy? Have you ever seen something like that happen? Have you ever shared a video that you shouldn't have shared? Would like to know all that stuff. So tweet us. We're at CodecastZM on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Codecast Zambia on LinkedIn now. Mm-hmm. So just drop us a message, mention us. If you can, send us a 1 minute long video. There's a link in the description. Mm-hmm. Would really like to hear that story as well.
Also, we're on Slack.
Oh, we're on Slack now too. So we'll post a link to our Slack channel. You can join us there if you want to talk to us about anything, or talk to most of our guests. Not all of our guests will be on Slack, but yeah. So we'll try as much as possible to get everybody there, and you can ask them any questions regarding any of the topics that we've done with them, and so on and so forth.
That'll reminder, really, it's not a platform to start trying to date someone. It's you talking about the episodes or suggesting episodes you would like us to talk about.
Yes,
topics to talk about.
Yeah,
Freddie, if anyone has a question for you, how can they find you?
They can't. I'm just joking. They can. I'm on Twitter at vintage_Freddie. Instagram, do people chat? Yeah, same handle at Vintage Freddy. Yeah, it's pretty much those two. Not on Facebook, but yeah, those two.
Why aren't you on Facebook again?
He's protecting his privacy and data.
Yeah, basically. No, but I'll be back on Facebook maybe next month. So you can just search for Freddie Tembo. Then you can.
Freddie, what changes taking place next month for you to go back on Facebook?
You never know. Some explosion. So that's Freddie, FREDDIE, not FREDDY, DIE.
Yeah. I'll be sure to make sure that in the description is very clear.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Freddie, for joining us. It's really been a pleasure. We appreciate it.
All right, guys.
Okay, so if you want to talk to me, that's sour_bones on Twitter. Mention me, DM me, whatever. We can talk about tech and whatever.
And my smile is back because Elias is here. Twitter handle.
My favorite part of the show.
It's funny because Cynthia was preaching professionalism at the beginning of this podcast.
Oh, sorry.
I feel like this should just become a segment.
Right.
Elias tries to...
I think maybe we should allow our listeners. I don't know how we're going to do this, but like some of them, if they could call in and actually suggest usernames for you.
No, I'm not changing my username on Twitter. My Twitter handle, as I should say, is Jorelli360. JOR_ELI360.
I'll say this again. Like, this is episode 18, right? We've been doing this for like a year straight. Like, you've gotten better at actually saying it. When you started, it was hilariously pathetic. Look, but it's gotten better.
Especially the R part.
Yeah.
This Jorelli.
I'm proud of you, son.
Yeah, I mean, I work hard.
Growth.
Yes. This is it. Like, you have to plug as well. Like.
Oh, pardon me. So, I am Python Khaleesi on Twitter. See, very easy. I am Cynthia Mlenga on Facebook, Cynthia Mlenga on LinkedIn, the lady with the dreadlocks and specs on the profile picture. We are many Cynthia Mlengas, apparently.
Are you sure there's no other Cynthia Mlenga with dreads and specs?
I hope there isn't. Yes. Which one? That's about it.
Yeah, pretty much it. This has been a great episode. I particularly enjoyed talking about all this stuff because it's something that is quite dear to me. And we're on almost every platform, podcast streaming platform near you. Send us a message if you'd like us to be on a platform that we are not, with obviously the name of the platform, and we'll try our best to get there as well. And we say bye until later.
Shall I?
Yeah, please.
Okay, Codecast
out. You've been listening to Codecast Zambia, brought to you by Agora Code. Visit agoracode.community for more information, or like us on Facebook. That's @CodeAgora. We're on Twitter too, @CodeAgora.